Welcome to What's Poppin', a podcast where we get to know the people of Prince of Peace a little bit better, but also talk about the message from the previous week. Today, my guest is Peter Trudell. Peter, thanks for coming today.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
So, Peter, let's start with the question I ask everybody, and that is, how long have you lived in the area?
Short answer, 37 years. And just the longer answer is different pockets of the Bay. So I grew up in Portola Valley.
Okay.
And then did both undergrad and grad school at Concordia Irvine.
Okay.
So I lived down there during the school year.
But, yeah.
And then pockets in kind of Menlo Park, San Jose, now Fremont.
All right. So all around the Bay Area then.
That's right.
All right. Okay. So you've been here all your life. How long have you been at Prince of Peace?
Probably about 6 years or so.
Okay, so 6 years of Prince of Peace. And what brought you to Prince of Peace?
Great question. I was doing a master's of theology at Concordia Irvine.
Okay.
And probably 75% of the way through, I liked it so much that I was like, you know, I would love to find a church that is similar in kind of doctrine to what I'm learning down south. So
yeah,
I Googled LCMS Church in Fremont, and Prince of Peace popped up.
Yeah.
And so I showed up, and someone invited me to a Bible, the Bible study, and said, "Hey, you got to check this out." And so,
and
once I was in that, I was like, "Wow, like this is just like taking a class down south," and I get to do
Pastor
it every Zelt, Sunday
for sure. Yeah, yeah, definitely. All right, so you said you took a you got a master's of theology at Irvine, right? What made you want to like dig further into theology and do it in like a formal way? What was the catalyst for that?
The catalyst was I had a dream one night, and I'd write my dreams down. So I had like a little dream journal, but the dream was that I was at Concordia Irvine, walking from where the dorms were towards the cafeteria. And I looked over to the left where the old cross country office was, and I saw theology, just like letters.
Okay.
And there are a couple other nuances to the dream, but I woke up and I was like, oh shoot. Like now, you know, like I was both excited, a little apprehensive, because I knew like what it, like what do I do with that? It's like, it's just out there now.
So real quick, does the cross country office aspect have any meaning to that dream for you?
I think it does, because so for my undergrad, I ran cross country at Concordia Irvine.
Okay.
And track.
All right.
And it's exactly, and they had basically they had changed where the office was, but like so, in a way, it's like I studied cross country in my undergrad. I just took it pretty seriously.
Okay.
And so now it got replaced by theology.
All right. And so, you followed the dream.
I followed the dream, and not all completely easy. I mean, to me, like where Concordia Irvine excels the most is in theological studies. So
yeah.
I thought like we went from, you know, studied undergrad, business and undergrad, and then theology for the master's. And it's like a whole different playing field. So
yes.
I had to put my thinking cap on and bear down. But you know, it was great.
Favorite class?
I mean, I liked them all, but the ones that stuck out were Professor Esch in the summer, like the intensives. Just it was in person, because I did most of it online.
Right. Yeah.
But those were in person, and those were fun on community. And then, believe it or not, just the, even though the end was a challenge with writing, you know, 90 page thesis,
right,
that
yeah.
was a very memorable part, because it was going deep into different topics.
All right. So what was your thesis about?
The antinomian debate was a good chunk of the thesis. I also talked about our thoughts, like how should we view thoughts? You know, because different groups of Christianity will view thoughts differently. So charismatic Christians can take a thought and call it God's voice when it may just be a thought.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe God's speaking, but it, you know, there's...
Right. And how do you know?
There's different, yeah. So the thesis went into that topic
and
where different camps stand.
So how do those two connect, the antinomian debate and on how we should view thoughts? How do those two connect together for you in your thesis?
I think they connect great, because you have, with the antinomian debate, part of the premise is, should the law be preached from the pulpit?
Right, and so nomos is law, so antinomian is like against the law, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And specifically, does it play a role in repentance?
Okay.
Okay, and so the... it ties to me, it should be preached, because you have an element of, if you don't know what the law is, mm-hmm. then you're far more likely to go off the track.
Okay.
Because you don't know what the road is.
Need that curb and that mirror.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
So that's the link.
And there. that has implications for the idea of thought, because it helps direct whether or not those thoughts are coming from yourself or from God. Is that your connection?
Yes. I mean, because you have the logos and the rhema.
Okay.
Right? So yeah. In a way, the various theological camps will weigh one of those more than the other. So the logos being like your solid Bible, like
your scripture,
preferably understood in Hebrew and Greek and all that.
Right,
but,
you
know, and then the rhema being like that spoken word, like that, you know, which other camps like view that
as being higher than the written word.
Yeah. And I think that's where the thing that we want to be cognizant of, mm-hmm. of not necessarily throwing out the baby with the bathwater and dismissing either one of the camps 100%, but trying to find like a radical middle ground where like you have some respect for each of the camps, but also you fight for like the best practice. And that's what I admire about the LCMS at large, is the fight for good doctrine.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think within that, like after looking at letters on that they wrote about the charismatic revival in like the 60s, they didn't completely dismiss some of the works of the Spirit.
Outcomes of it. Yeah.
So fascinating.
All right.
Yeah.
I bet you never thought you'd talk about that today, did you?
I didn't. But that's good.
All right. So jumping back a little bit, cross country runner. And is that part of how you got down to Irvine in the first place? Did you go there for athletics? Did you get any scholarships?
Yeah, it was part of my going to Concordia Irvine, but also part of my like Christian journey at large, interestingly enough. So it's a minor rabbit trail, is I applied to Concordia Irvine, Westmont, like maybe Point Loma. And when, you know, you'd get these like, hey, how fast do you run the mile?
Yeah.
800 time.
And those are my next questions, just so you know.
So Russell Smellie at Westmont.
Russell Smellie broke
trend, right? So he asked those questions, but then he said, how's your walk with Jesus Christ?
Oh.
Which the other coaches didn't ask.
Yeah.
And at the time, as like a junior or senior in high school, it kind of caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I think I'm off the path.
Oh, okay.
And maybe that's why I'm applying to your school. But it was one of those moments where I realized that kind of didn't take it very seriously. And I just, but it's a turning point in my life, just that one question, and it kind of slowly birthed this like passion towards the ways of God, the things of God. And
that's awesome. All right, so another burning question. Mile time?
High school was 4:35, Los Gatos High School, last race of my senior year.
Wow.
I needed one more. If I would have run at like a 4:33, I would have made it to the next round. It was an exciting race.
For like state?
It was the league finals. And since we were Division 5 for track and field in the Bay Area, they only took the number one runner. And so the number one runner ran a 4:34. But most races was way out in front.
Yeah.
And in this particular magical race, I ran the last lap in 61 seconds.
Oh.
And so I can replay it in my head. It was so, I did everything I could, like other than I should have maybe run my third lap a little bit faster. But I laid it all out on that last lap and almost got it.
I mean, 4:35 is moving.
Yeah, I mean, especially now when I think back, and I'm just happy to run. I ran a 6:45 yesterday on the track.
Well, that's still pretty
but
good.
But it felt like that was all I could do.
You're 37 now, right? So that's pretty good. So let's see. You are 37. I'm 45. 4:35 would have won state in Wisconsin when I was running.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because kids are just getting faster and faster and faster. I mean, I ran a 4:40 and I was six. And I remember talking to my coach. He went to the same high school I went to and he was my coach. And he ran high 4:30, you know, and won state. But it was like 20 years earlier, you know?
Yeah.
And so I wonder how fast are kids running now? You know,
there's one person that I went to school with at Concordia Irvine.
Yeah.
Who's on the track team. He coaches at a school down south.
Yeah.
And he has some milers that have hit like four. So he has like the best milers in the country.
But still, think about it. That's a high schooler, right?
Yeah.
And so,
like 4:03.
Yeah. Like it used to be 5 minute mile was like really, really good, you know? And now in high school, if you can't run a 5 minute mile, yeah, that's, you're like JV.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like 4:20 is like a pretty good time.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah. That's crazy. So fast. There has to be a point where you can't go any faster.
Yeah. That was the thought with Roger Bannister, right? To break that 4 minute threshold.
Yeah.
And as soon as he did, then other people were like, oh, you can do it.
You can
know?
Do it. Yeah.
But I think with like nutrition and training strategies, there'll always be ways to get a little bit faster.
At some point you were sprinting the whole time though. You know what I mean? Like at some point there's not going to be a kick anymore because you're just going that fast for the whole race.
Yeah.
I asked all the guests two things to bring from the previous message from the previous Sunday. And so did you have two things you thought were interesting that made you think or you want to comment on from the message last Sunday? We talked about Acts chapter 9 verses 1 to 19, I believe, and the call / conversion of Saul.
Yes. So the first one is you unpacked some background that I appreciated, which was Acts 7.
Mm.
And in there, we see the depth, some additional depth to Saul.
Yes.
That I've read Acts a number of times, but for whatever reason, that kind of got, I just never really paid attention to that specific part that you talked about.
Yeah. It's a couple of verses. Yeah. You know, it's not much.
And so if you're like that, the part that I'm referring to is basically Saul being okay with the stoning of Stephen.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't stop it.
Watching the coats of the guys, like, here, I don't want to get this sweaty and full of blood, and lay their coat down by Saul, and he watches the coats while they are stoning him. Yeah.
Yes. So it's just to me that you see, like, the context of this much more so, and if you were to compare him to, say, someone like Joseph, where he faced an interesting scenario with Mary, and he was like, "I'm going to quietly divorce her."
Yeah.
Or like maybe he could have done something like Saul and said, hey, we're going to come down really hard.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, so that was takeaway number one. And then the takeaway number two is the element in that we can all relate to the story because we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God.
Mm.
And that hopefully it wasn't quite like Saul's story, but one way or another, it's, You come to a point in your life where you hope things become clear.
Mm.
And we saw that with Saul. He had that moment where all of a sudden, you know, it took him going blind first, but he did eventually see clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. The you know, sort of the epitome of the come to Jesus moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And one heck, I mean, it's tough to top as far as like, I don't know if I can think of one right now.
It really is. And, you know, the when I was preparing for the message, the more I thought about it, it's like, you know, Saul really was the enemy of Jesus, and he made himself the enemy of Jesus. Like, he saw Jesus as being the enemy of God. right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah, that's how he saw Jesus. And so if you follow Jesus, then you deserve to be thrown into prison. And if you don't, you know, say you're going to turn your back on Jesus, then maybe you should die for it. Like, I just can't imagine having Jesus stand before you at that point and go, what are you doing? Can you imagine Saul going to that first Christian gathering? People try to psychoanalyze Saul probably too much, you know, but you really get sort of a view into his psyche when you think about who he was before, having Jesus confront him, and then having him be the guy that goes and is the one of the most, I don't want to respect it, but well-known, you know, proponents of Jesus and being the Jewish Messiah and can prove it from the scriptures and go talk to everybody about that. You know, it's you wonder how people greeted him for the first couple of years, or if people even ever trusted him. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the great things about the gospel message is, in a way, like, for those that have sinned much, they're forgiven much.
Mm, yeah.
But then, you know, if they've sinned little, they love little in a weird, odd way.
Yeah.
And Paul's a great example of, like, really, you know, off the deep end, but that was what flipped the switch for him so much, is he realized, like, just how far he had gone.
Yeah. And it helps us understand his writings in the New Testament then a little bit more too. Like, he's so full of grace, but he also wants people to be on the right track. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's over and over again. Don't get Jesus wrong, you know, and be on the right track. Know that your righteousness comes from him alone and not from anything else. Get your theology right. You want to make sure you know who God is, because if you don't, you can go off into all types of wrong directions and think you're doing the right thing, but you could lose the gospel altogether.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's helpful to understand his whole backstory, to understand his writings even better.
Agreed.
Yeah. Anything else from the previous Sunday's message that you...
I liked the element that you brought in with perspective in general, and that I think that that's a good reminder when we sat in different spots in the sanctuary.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever done something quite like that.
Mm.
And it was neat.
Do you sit in the same place pretty much every time?
I tried to buck the trend a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so I was out in, like, the foyer, and pastor's out was like, hey, like, we're starting worship. Like, come on in.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, okay, like, I'm not going to sit in the back today. I'm sitting in the third row. Right. Yeah. And so then, I was like, wow, that was really cool. I was like, normally if you want to sit in the third row at the Warriors game, it's not so easy to do.
Yeah.
Where I just walked to the third row.
Yeah.
And it was easy, and it felt like I was in the game.
Yeah.
So it was fun to get that new perspective. But normally it was like, backside, left, like furthest row back.
Isn't it weird how when it's a thing that we are there for volunteering or like voluntarily go to, we're like, I'm going to sit in back. You know, because not just worship, it could be like a meeting or anything else. Like, I'm going to sit in back. But if we pay for it, we're like, well, I want to be as close as possible. It's like, if it's free, it can't be worth being close to. I have a question for you, though, with this whole switching spots. Did you notice that the sound is different?
Yes.
In different spots?
The right side seems less loud.
Less loud? Right
even
side.
Even though I was in the third row.
Yeah.
Or so.
Yeah.
Like, so where the person will give, like, reading from second.
Yeah. 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 Okay, so right side, facing the front right side. Yeah,
seems. And you have a nice view of the stained glass.
Yeah, you do have a nice view of the stained glass there.
Like, I didn't even know that was there.
now you've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm glad that worked for a lot of people. I think it did drive the point home of perspective and being willing to change. And if you're willing to change a little bit, you might see things a little bit different too.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Anything else from the previous message or anything else you want to talk about that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just a great theme, though. I mean, Pastor Zeltz mentioned that in past sermons where it's just, you know, people are viewing things from their perspective and not you as a human being think in a certain way, and it's not necessarily fair to expect someone else to think in the exact same way. Like,
right.
You're totally different. So when you have that respect for each other's perspective, I think that's really helpful.
That's very helpful. Yeah. And it also leads to better conversations, better discussions, easier to love somebody.
Yeah.
And be graceful when you respect their perspective on things. I had a chance to meet with Peter a couple months ago. Actually, when I first got here, we got together and talked a little bit. And I learned that he has a background in broadcasting and announcing. And so I asked him a question. I let him know ahead of time is, who is your favorite sports announcer? And can you do an impression of him or her?
Yeah. So I gave some thought to that.
Yeah.
And one of the things I appreciate about the Prince of Peace preschool is they've taught Austin, when he has a question of who's your best friend, he's like, well, I like all of them, daddy. Then in a way, it's like, I appreciate all of the broadcasters and what they bring.
Yeah.
That said,
yeah,
there are some that have a special place in my heart.
Okay.
So growing up in the Bay, I look at them as a pack. So it's, you know, John Miller for the San Francisco Giants.
Okay.
Kruko and Kipe. Those three are just a fun element. And so if you're like me and have grown up watching the Giants or listened to them on the radio, you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Okay. Can you do an impression?
So I decided I didn't want to
didn't want to try?
No. I can't replay an exact clip.
Okay.
But I can give you the essence and create a clip based off what I've heard over the years.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So it'll go something like this.
Yeah.
2-2, bottom of the ninth inning, Barry Bonds steps to the plate. Now, it'll take me a little bit to get into pure flow. But
yeah.
One of the things I love about watching Barry Bonds play baseball is that at AT&T Park, you see people on their phone. You see people taking client out to a game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Their family.
Yeah.
And when Bonds comes to the plate,
everyone watches.
People put the phones down.
Yeah.
And it's all eyes on Bonds.
Yeah.
So here's the clip.
Yeah.
2-2. Johnson looks in, delivers, and Bonds hits one high and deep to right. Back goes Mondesi to the wall. Out of here. And the Giants win 3-2. So the clip that I replays in my head over the years is just that out of here.
Yeah.
It's like a signature kind of call by those guys when a home run goes out.
Yeah. That was awesome. I felt like I was at the game. Yeah. So Peter has done color commentary.
Play-by-play.
Yeah. And so that's not an easy skill, I don't think. We talked about how it's tough to, you know, say every player's name as it happens and keep track of everybody. Because you did basketball too, right? That was...
Yeah, I tried, interestingly enough, basketball is that's my jam.
Yeah.
Baseball, I tried to broadcast it. I didn't care for it.
Really?
Yeah, it's the pacing's too slow.
Ah,
so see. Basketball, it's like Brown inbounds, left side Johnson. You know, and you can, and I did so much basketball that you can, I found that you can, I don't know. It was just something special about basketball.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Peter, I really appreciate you coming in and sharing more about yourself and talking about scripture and Acts and everything. And I think we're going to have you come back. What we should do, actually, is have you do some of these. You should interview some folks. You up for that?
Let's get ready to rumble.
All right. Let's do it. Thanks, Peter.
My pleasure.